Joy.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who love to write and love to read, because today I have a really special program. This is one of my special relay interviews. I'm going to be talking to four fabulous authors, and they are all featured in Lawrence Block's latest anthology. As you all know, I love anthologies. I think they are just They make wonderful gifts, and especially at this time of the year, you're not sure what kind of a book people like, what kind of story they like. An anthology is a wonderful gift. So today I have four authors: Brendan Dubois, Janice Idas, Charles Arday, Micah Nathan, and they've all been chosen by a good friend of Joy on Paper, Lawrence Block. And I'm just so thrilled that I'm going to talk first to Brendan Dubois. And the name of the book is From Sea to Stormy Sea. It is the third in Larry's wonderful series of anthologies. I've had the authors for the other books before, In Sunlight and in Shadow, which are stories inspired by Edward Hopper's paintings, and Alive in Shape and Color. And now this third book is absolutely fantastic. The art is amazing. And so I am very thrilled to... Welcome to Joy on Paper, Brendan Dubois. Hi.
Hey, Patsy. Thanks for having me here. I bet you it's warmer down there than up here in New Hampshire.
Well, I had family from up north down here for Thanksgiving, too. And yeah, they thought it was really hot here at 72, 78. It went up to 80. And they're saying, oh, it's so hot. It's so hot. And for us, it's so cold. So. Anyway, it's always nice. An author can be stuck in the snow. What difference does it make? Because you get to write.
Exactly. My workplace is a 1 minute walk from the bedroom, so I don't worry about being snowed in.
That's it. Well, you know, it is such an honor to, for many reasons, to welcome you to Joy on Paper.
Thank you.
You're an award-winning author. How many times did you win the Seamus Award for Best Story?
Three times for the Seamus Award.
And, of course, you were Best American Mystery Stories of the Century in that book that was edited by Otto Prenzler, which says something. And then, of course, now with Larry Block, you know, he is so marvelous. I saw him at BoucherCon last month in Dallas, and it was so great to see him.
He's wonderful, and, you know, the fact that he's been such an active and supportive member of the community for decades is just a tribute to him and his talent.
It is, and he loves to help authors and to promote authors and to bring authors forward, you know, who people might not know. But, of course, in your case, you're sort of known for a number of things. But it's absolutely – I just have to tell everyone, my listeners, because I know they will be thrilled, and everybody's been watching Jeopardy lately. So you were a winner.
Yes, I was a Jeopardy winner back in 2012, went out and won $24,000.
Oh, that's
then
nice.
I came back a week later and had my butt handed to me in the proverbial silver platter, but it was a wonderful experience.
Well, absolutely. And then what I really like is that you defeated the Beast.
Yes, there was a game show on the Game Show Network called The Chase, where it was myself and another team member up against the Beast, who was considered the best trivia player in the world. And we managed to squeak out a victory, and that was extremely satisfying.
Yeah, that's satisfying. I love when people beat him. He gets on my nerves, and I love trivia programs. So, yeah, that was a wonderful win for you.
Well, thank you.
Now, of course, as I said, it's getting to be a big thing for authors to be selected by Larry to participate in one of his anthologies. This brilliant idea that he got several years ago, first with the Edward Hopper book, it was like, whoa, just one flash of brilliance, and he's now carried it through for several years. And the new book, is really quite amazing. Tell us about the story that you wrote and the art. First, how did you select the art? And the story is called Adrift Off the Diamond Shoals. So tell us about...
Yeah, first of all, I was just thrilled and honored to be invited by Larry. Let's get that out of the way, because he's such a great guy and a great editor.
And he's listening.
And there were a number of American paintings involving, landscape and the seashore. And one of the painters was Winslow Homer. And I live in New Hampshire, and Winslow Homer is pretty much considered a New England-based artist. And the painting is called Reefing Sails Around Diamond Shoals, Cape Hatteras. And it just shows these sailors in a sailboat in the stormy seas off Cape Hatteras. And right then and there, that's where the story is going to be set. And I just thought, just the history of the place, the conflict, the storms, the violence, it begs to have a story written there. And that was the easy part. And I got to work. And my story is called Adrift Off the Diamond Shoals. It takes place on an island called Rodance. I think I'm mispronouncing it, North Carolina. And there's an approaching Category 5 hurricane coming. And there's an old-time resident there who wants to settle some business before the hurricane strikes. And it's a story about family. It's a story about loss. It's also a story about revenge. Being an Irish of descent, we Irish are big on revenge. And that was a fun story to write.
Yes, you do tend to hold grudges for many years.
There's that very non-PC question, what is Irish Alzheimer's? We forget everything except our grudges.
And, that's true. And, it's so funny. When I realized that you were going to be one of the authors on the program, it's been a long time since I read a book you wrote called Resurrection Day.
And yes. That was some time ago.
Yeah, it was. And I sort of forgot. I knew I didn't forget the book at all, because the book is really one of those alternate history books that I enjoy reading and I enjoy thinking about. I love history. And so when I realized that you were coming on, I had to go digging through my library. I used to have over 6,000 books. I've cut it down now. I've only got about 3,000 something.
Oh, yeah. But, sounds familiar.
But I do still have that book. And, in the anthology, I think it's a great introduction for people to see your writing. And
thank you.
Because you are, top class. And then, as I mentioned to you in my email, I want to have you back in January, February, because there's so much to talk to you about, especially, I think, Resurrection Day, looking at it today, because in that book you mention a certain senator, and it's so funny that today, what has changed or what hasn't changed, and all of the ideas that you came up with, because obviously you have one of those minds that really thinks deeply about history and about the possibilities, and it's a great book.
Well, thank you, Patsy. Yes, it's a story about what would have happened if the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962 had actually erupted into a nuclear war between the United States and the Soviet Union. And I think it's my finest book, and it still resonates with a lot of people, so thank you.
Well, that I remembered it so... I remember details of that book, and when I dug it out, I said, yes, I remember all of this. And for me, when I started this radio program just like over 4 years ago, and in my mind, I never imagined that I would be talking to my favorite authors. And so it's such a thrill. And I'm so glad
thank
you, that
Patty. You're... It's very kind of you.
Well, I'm glad you're included in this anthology, because I love anthologies. I think they're great gifts, because there's all... You can give an anthology, and there's bound to be 3-4 stories that, a person will absolutely love. And the others, they'll find interesting and discover new authors that they maybe never heard about. So
right.
Larry made a wonderful, wonderful selection in you. And I know that, as I said, I want you to be back. We'll have a whole half an hour. I've done this now. As I said, this is the third book, and I've done these sort of relay interviews. I had never even thought about it. But then when we did the first book, I could decide which authors I wanted to talk to.
There's a lot to choose from.
Yes, well, in this book there are 17 authors, 17 stories. All of you are just fantastic, and of course, including Larry's in there.
Oh, Larry, yes.
and I also, it's just such a thrill for me. Sometimes I'm finding writers I didn't remember, hadn't read, and then sometimes I'm finding old friends, sort of, books that I still have in my mind. So, Brendan Dubois, I think you are fantastic. There's so much to talk to you about, and I don't have time because I'm going to get to Janice, but I do want to say you have a website, and it's called brendandubois.com. And you've also worked with all sorts of wonderful people. You worked with James Patterson. And I also want to mention another book that you wrote, Negotiator. So people go to Brendan's website. And I want to thank you for being on today to promote this new anthology just in time for the holidays.
Just in time for holidays. Yeah, it's a great collection, really.
It is. Yeah. And we will have you back sometime in January, February, okay?
Absolutely, Patsy. I look forward to it. You take care.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
All right. And now I'm going to be talking to Janice Itis. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly.
You did.
Okay, Janice. Hi. How are you?
Hi. Good.
Okay. Well, I've been having fun talking to Brendan, and it's such a thrill now to be talking to you about this wonderful anthology, the brilliant idea, of course, of Larry Block, mystery writer of America Grandmaster. He always comes out with great ideas, but this particular one, I think this third book in this anthology series is just fantastic.
Oh, I completely agree. I was so thrilled to be invited. Visual art is a huge passion of mine, and Larry and I are old friends, and he knew that.
Well, he certainly selected the right authors for this book, because there are, as I said, there's 16 besides him. Of course, he's fantastic, but all of you, and I think it's a wonderful opportunity for people to get to know authors that they might not know. And I've been reading your work now ever since I discovered that you were going to be on the program. And I want to tell you, The War of the Rosens. Wow.
Wow. Well, thank you.
The 10-year-old and, narrator there. There's so many things in that story that just hit me. And I mentioned to Brendan that I'm going to have him back sometime January or February. I'm going to invite you back because there are so many of your books that I want to talk to you about. And, you are, of course, an award-winning author. You won the O. Henry how many times? Twice?
Twice.
Twice. Okay. Well, that's pretty great. I think that's pretty great. And I'm sure you've won lots of other awards, but we don't have time to go through them all. But let's talk now, because we want to promote this book for the holidays. And it is such the idea that Larry came out with to select. He selected 40 American artists and let you select the one that you wanted to write about in this book called From Sea to Stormy Sea. So tell us about your story. It's called A Walking Time Bomb. Tell us about how you selected the author, the artist, and the painting, and what the idea is about behind it.
Well, I have always loved Rothko's painting, and when Larry sent us all the paintings, I knew instantly that Rothko's number 14 was going to be mine, and it was for two reasons, really. And one was visually, I just love the way the bold reds and purples kind of seamlessly flow together. I think that's brilliant. And the other is my beloved therapist of many years, whose name is Joan Stein, told me many times that Rothko was her favorite artist. So it's also my homage to Joan. And as you know, the main character is someone who really wants to help others. And Joan really wanted to help others, and they share this love of Rothko, and I share the love of Rothko. So it was a perfect combination.
Well, I think so, too. It was just a great choice. And so Tell us more about the story. What do you want people to know about it?
Well, you know, my character is a life coach, which is a fairly new helping profession. And she's dedicated her life at this point to helping her clients lead fulfilling lives, and she also wants to lead a fulfilling life. She had a brush with mortality a few years back. She had a brain aneurysm, which she fully recovered from, but it has helped her to see that we have one life to live, however brief, however long, and that through a great passion and purpose in life, we move forward and we appreciate the gift of life. In her case, her passion and purpose becomes helping others and also nurturing this tremendous love she has for art and the imagination.
Well, it is. You are just a fantastic writer. There's the you have this poetic style. It's just very touching how you write. And I thought this was just a wonderful, wonderful story. And I'm sure that, you know, when people, as I said, when people get anthologies, they don't always read them in order. You know, as particularly a book like this with that's got the photographs of the great paintings. And I have a feeling that as people are, you know, thumbing through this Rothko painting, which I've seen, and you stand in front of it, you say, whoa. And there's so many thoughts that can come into your mind. And I have a feeling that when people are thumbing through the book, they're going to stop at this one and say, yeah, I have to read this story right away. I need to know what she saw in this painting and why she selected it. And I just thought it was just a great choice for you.
Well, you know, he's an abstract expressionist. So when I saw his work, my brain just went so many different places because he doesn't provide sort of a concrete photo, you know, painting of people walking through the street or at the beach. And I just thought, well, there's some story here in this work, in these colors, and I will find that story and I will create it and it will connect me to him and his, you know, what was trying to do over the years. And my painting, what was interesting is I've loved Rothko for a long time, but I had never seen this number 14 in person. And it turned out, lo and behold, that I was about to take a trip to San Francisco, and this painting hangs in the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, and I ran there, and I stood beside the painting, and in fact, I sent you the photo, and there I am, all in black, which is the New York woman's color, next to this bold and vibrant, huge canvas, and my grin is, you know, ear to ear, and it was just a serendipitous and wonderful moment.
Well, I can see where it touched you, and it's funny, when I was so happy you sent me that lovely photograph, and of course, I knew the artwork. I was in San Francisco a while back, and I was there too, and then I went to your website, and right away, I was caught with that you had this bright color. And I thought, well, you know, she's got something Rothko in her, and it's a beautiful picture of you. And it's funny, the taxi, the yellow cabs or look sort of orange cabs, the light post, and then your homage to your other book, Urban Bliss. And I thought, whoa, she's like, there's something, I can see why the Rothko got to her. There's something in her mind that she loves these colors.
You know, I do. And colors make me come alive. And in fact, my current book that I'm writing, which is a nonfiction book, is about female friendship and how at any age we can nurture friendships. And one of the ways I've done this, and this will be in the book, is I throw themed parties, and I have coming up soon, and the theme is color.
I'm a theme party person.
You are.
I love theme parties. I'll do anything. for a theme park. I mean, I'll do a Monet cake for Monet. I love theme parties. This is fantastic.
Well, you should come to one of my parties next time you're in New York.
I will. You have to tell me, and you never know. And of course, you sometimes come down to Florida. You do some, right? You come down to.
Yes, I've taught at the Sanibel Island Writers Conference, and I've spoken in Tampa and St. Petersburg. So I have a tremendous bond with Florida and the colors in Florida.
Well, yes, they. I can see that they would really get to you because you are a person that just sort of. There's that bright spot in your life and that the love of color. So, yeah, either you're going to come to one of my theme parties or I'm going to come to one of your theme parties because I've been doing that. I've been doing that for years. It's so funny. I started doing it with my boys, and we would do all sorts of theme parties. We started, of course, with the holidays. One time we built a gigantic, I'm talking a really gigantic, like a long table, ship out of pink wafer cookies for Valentine's Day, and we started with that, and then after that I just started doing theme parties for everything. So it's absolutely this is fantastic. I love it. Oh wow. And again, we have to thank Larry Block so much. I think it's becoming a real prestigious thing to get selected to be in one of his anthologies.
Well, I agree. And, you know, here he is, this absolutely brilliant mystery writer, and he turns out to be brilliant about visual art. And I met Larry and his absolutely wonderful wife, Lynn, years ago at an artist's colony in Virginia. And we spent two fantastic weeks talking and talking about art and writing and music, and then here he is now, you know, working with his great love of visual art, and he remembered, you know, how much I love it. So I just am amazed by him and what he continues to do.
Well, he is brilliant. And, of course, his daughter, Jill Block, she was in the last anthology, and also she loves art. So it's really a theme, I think, through his life. And this love of art, and he's included this in some of his stories, too. And you're right, he has an absolutely wonderful eye for art.
He does, and now I think we should all have a themed party together.
That's it, absolutely, because I love theme parties. Don't you? I like to be creative and to have fun and to just have that sort of a talking point for a party. When my boys were playing musical instruments, we'd have, you know, a composer parties and things like that. And so it's just, it makes it memorable when you have theme parties.
It does. And since, you know, color and art is so much a passion of mine, my friends and I dressed. I did one on female visual artists, and we tried to dress like our favorite artists. Frida Kahlo, and we just had a ball. And so for me, Larry helped me to, you know, really write about art and writing and helping people and living a life of passion. And so I found a way to bring together so many of my themes in this story.
Well, it's a wonderful story, and I want people just to know that you have a very, I love the website, and it's Janice Idis, right? We say Idis?
We do.
Okay, and it's spelled E-I-D-U-S. It's Janice Idis. Go to the website. It's really nice. You'll see this. As I said, I love the photograph. I don't know who did this photograph with the, that they got the lamppost to look so orange and the everything. It's just, it's beautiful. And of course, you do have an amazingly beautiful smile. And I will contact you and we will have you back sometime in January or February so we can talk more about all of your other books, okay? And also about being a private writing coach.
I will, and I look very forward to it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on the program today, Janice, and we'll have you back soon, okay?
Thanks. Take care.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
website.
Okay, in a minute, I'm going to be talking to Charles Arday. Janice was so much fun. I just want to stop for a moment and say, you know, I am so thrilled to have two wonderful sponsors, Larson and Larson. Bill Larson comes in once a month, and he's our intellectual property lawyer. He gives advice to all of you people out there, particularly to, well, you know, it doesn't matter. I have spoken to the most famous authors in the world, and I can tell you, even the smartest and the richest and the biggest still run into problems with their intellectual property. People steal it. People claim that it's stolen. You never know. You need a great, great, absolutely great intellectual property lawyer, because I know from experience, when I was young and naive and trusting, I didn't. And I have been sorry for it for the past 30 years. So please, if you need a good intellectual property lawyer, contact Bill Larson at Larson & Larson. They're here in St. Petersburg. Absolutely fantastic lawyer, and he will help you. And he's now known all over the country because he's really so great. And then, of course, Glenn Erickson. I just want to thank him so much for supporting Joy on Paper. And he is going to be a guest here to talk about his new book on the 19th, December 19th, and we're going to be talking about Android Love, and I'm really excited that he's going to be a guest here. But now I'm going to turn to Charles Arday. Wow. Charles, are you there?
I am here. How are you?
Okay, great. Well, it is so nice to have you on the phone. It's been fun. I do these relays for Larry, every one of his anthologies, and it's always so much fun to be able to talk to authors, some whose books I have read and some who are new to me. And so it was really wonderful when I realized that you're the founder of Hard Case Crime. So it's exciting, isn't it, to be again selected by Larry to be in this book? And the name of your story
absolutely
is Mother of Pearl. And you know, tell us about how you he gave you an option. You could look at the photographs that he had selected, all American artists, great American artists, to feature in this book. Which artist did you select, and why?
And why? I selected Piet Mondrian. And anyone who knows Larry's books, his wonderful Bernie Rodenbaum burglar novels, will remember that one of the very best of them, the fifth, I think, was called The Burglar Who Painted Like Mondrian.
I
read that
it.
Book, you remember, it's a wonderful book, and I fell in love with not just the book, but the paintings of Mondrian, who's famous for these paintings that have nothing on them but black lines on a white background and then rectangles, bright red, yellow, and blue. You've seen them on a million tote bags. You've seen them in museums. And I thought, how do you write a story based on that? That's a challenge. If you have a story that shows a cowboy on horseback, you write about a cowboy on horseback. That's easy. But how do you write a story based on black lines on a white background? And what I thought was, it reminded me of a New York street grid seen from the top. You look down on streets, it looks like the Manhattan street. And the title of the painting was Broadway Boogie Woogie, so that fit nicely with it. Boogie Woogie, of course, was popular in World War II, so I thought that gives me my period. And what would be an interesting story? And I thought, let's have three vignettes, three scenes that take place in Times Square. And with these three scenes, one in World War II, one in the present day, and one in between, could I capture in just 8 or 9 pages the entire life of a character from conception to death and make it interesting? So that's the story that I tried to tell, how she was conceived in 1945 at the end of World War II, and then at age 18 she came back to Times Square looking for information about her parents, who she never knew, and then at the very end of her life we learn information about who her parents were. And you know, is there a way to tell that story in a very concise short story form? What you would normally need a whole novel length book to tell, is there a way to do that? And I had a lot of fun doing it.
Well, I thought it was a wonderful choice, and you're right. I had never sort of thought about it as a grid of New York, but when you look at it, and it's one of his busier works. It's not
yes.
not just plain black lines, and so. But once now everybody. when they read this book, they're always going to say, oh, that's a grid of New York.
So, right, exactly. I'll give you one other little behind-the-scenes tidbit. The World War II setting was given by the title Boogie Woogie, and I was trying to remember where I first came across Boogie Woogie music, and it was in the Abbott and Costello movie Buck Privates, when they had the Andrews sisters singing as backup artists. And that's why the character in the book is a street peddler, because if you go back to that wonderful old Abbott and Costello movie from 1942 or whenever it was, the boys were street peddlers working out of a suitcase on the street. They would prop it open and sell neckties. So I had my character be someone who sold neckties on the street, just a little tip of the hat to that original Boogie Woogie movie that was where so many people first heard the wonderful song Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy.
Well, it's a great story and a great choice, and especially for somebody, a New Yorker like yourself, I can see that you would see it immediately as a grid of New York. And
right.
You know, I think it's, as I've mentioned before on my program, whenever I get an opportunity to review an anthology, I'm really happy because there are so many people who they don't know where to start. They don't know who to read. They don't know what to read. And one of my favorite authors is Carolyn Hart, who is a cozy mystery writer of America, Grandmaster, of course. But what I love about her books is, which are set in a bookstore, she mentions authors. And many times, I discovered authors that I didn't know, like Mike Resnick. I didn't know Mike Resnick's work until I read one of her cozy mysteries. And of course, he's a sci-fi writer. So I got to him on a completely different, you know, wavelength. And it was so wonderful because now, I mean, I love Mike Resnick and he's been on the program many times. And this can happen also with an anthology. You might recognize a few people. People will say, oh, Sarah Paretsky's written here. You know, okay. Right. But there are so many other authors other than Sarah Paretsky or, you know, in some of the other books, Lee Child contributed. Right. But this way, authors who aren't as well known get an opportunity to find a new audience. And that's really the name of the game. You need to find a new audience. And you certainly, you've done so much for just in general for crime fiction and promoting crime fiction and authors. So I was really thrilled that you were in this book.
I was thrilled too. Larry's been my favorite writer for many, many years. I've known him for 30 years, and the chance to do this with him was a real treat. He wrote the very first hard case crime novel back in 2004. We reprinted a book of his called Grifter's Game, and we've published a dozen of his books since. So it was fun to get to return the favor and switch the roles with him being the editor and me being the writer for a change. It was just a great, great pleasure.
Well, tell us, as I mentioned to everybody who's on the program today, that I'm going to invite you all back for your own half hour.
That's great.
Because I think, you know, it's so fascinating to hear about how, you know, what you're doing and to discover more about you and to promote your work and to promote the work that you're doing. And particularly, I think, hard case crime. Explain just a little bit about that. We don't have much time because I do have to go on. And, you know, but I do want to, you know, before I go turn to Mike and Nathan, I want to hear a little bit more about hard case.
The one-line version, hard case crime is a revival of style of old paperback crime novels that you used to see in the 1940s and 50s, which were very slender, inexpensive, quick reads, exciting, and they had beautiful painted covers, usually with a beautiful woman and not too much clothing, and a man with a gun and a hat and a trench coat. These books were a lot of fun, and you saw them all over the place between the 40s and the 60s, and then they went out of favor, and my partner Max and I decided we were going to bring this back, and we thought it was just going to last for a year, but it's been 15 years. We've published more than 100 of these books, including books by Stephen King, Michael Crichton, Mickey Spillane, Joyce Carol Oates, some very famous authors, some first novelists. I've written 3 books for The Line myself. Max wrote one, and it's been a great blast. So anyone who's interested in seeing what these beautiful covers look like can pick up a copy at any bookstore or go to hardcasecrime.com. You'll immediately get the sense of what we're doing, and hopefully you'll enjoy it.
Well, I think so. And the name of you have a website, which is called hardcasecrime.com.
That's
right. And people can go there and see more about you, more about the books. And as I mentioned, I will have you back sometime in February, January, February, and we'll have a whole half an hour to talk about all of your work, because you are a fascinating author, and and of course, you know, I think you've won a few awards and nominated for things.
One or two,
you know, but we don't have time today to go through all of it.
No, that's fine. Get on to Micah, but everyone should read this book. It's a terrific anthology. I'm proud to be part of it. It's 17 stories, and they're all great. Read the book.
Absolutely. Okay, well, it was great talking to you. Talk to you
soon.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye. All right. Oh, this is so exciting. I'm four great authors in a row. What can I say? This is a special, special day. And now I'm turning to Micah Nathan. Hi, Micah.
Hang on. We're getting her. Your schedule says
okay. Well, I'm a little fast. You know, I'm a little... I'm getting there. That gives me a moment to talk again about... listen, everybody, go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com. And in the next few weeks, I'm going to be making some changes, adding some more information. Please, please, if you are writing a book, if you are, or if you've written a book, make sure that you know your intellectual property responsibilities, because it is a responsibility. Property is property. It's valuable. And I want you to make sure that you contact Larson and Larson. They're my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. And now I get to talk to Micah Nathan. Hi, Micah.
Hello, Patsy.
Oh, wow. This is wonderful. I'm so thrilled. It's been just so wonderful. I've spoken to Brendan, Janice, Charles, and now you. And, you know, this book is so beautiful and so wonderful. And, of course, Larry Block's done it again, right?
Of course, always. Yeah, I actually felt a little bit weird when he said yes, when I had asked him. And he said, yeah, why don't you write something and let's see how it looks.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, so, yeah. And he showed me all the photos of the paintings, and I had never actually seen Daniel's work before. And that one just struck me first.
Okay, so you selected what painting?
Daniel Morber's painting. And it's funny, the title of the painting escapes me because I just started writing my story as an accompaniment, so the title of my story sort of feels like the title of the painting, which is such an egotistical thing to say.
Get him. I like that title.
Thank you.
Okay, so tell us what about the painting inspired you? How'd you get the idea to go ahead with it?
Well, you know, I should have expected that question. It's still really hard. Let me see if I can answer it as honestly as possible without sounding foolish. I grew up in a small farm town about 30 miles south of Buffalo, so that's sort of the screen door to the Midwest. And I think because of that, I've always been attracted to just flat, wide-open spaces with giant skies. And when I saw Morber's piece, the idea, you know, that kind of classic strangers on a train setup came right into my head. And I thought, okay, so I sort of know the era this is going to be set in. Maybe sometime 1950s, 1960s. And I want people to meet on a train, and I want those two people to be going to different destinations. And I want one of them to be kind of a bad person. And the story grew from there. Am I being too vague?
No. This is what's fascinating about an author. It's how your mind works, how you come out just one, you know, it is this fact that one little thing can send an author in so many directions. You can see so much sometimes in so little, or you in something that's very detailed, sometimes you can pick out that one thing that's important.
Yes, that is well said. I should be interviewing you. and, you know, to sort of, I guess, add a little bit of frosting to that is my fiction writing is often really informed by space. I get this vivid image first, and then the story follows. So having Larry, that idea of having a, having the writers inspired by great pieces of artwork is something that really turned me on from the very start. And I'm sort of shocked that it took this long for someone to think of it. But I guess that's how these things work, you know? And, yeah, it made the writing process much easier, much easier. As whenever I was felt like I was losing my way, I would just refer back to the image of that train track receding into the distance and that beautiful sky and the dirt and the dust and the empty train station. And I wrote that story, you know, and some of your readers can say, well, it certainly shows in both a good way and perhaps a bad way, but I wrote that story pretty much in one sitting. And then, of course, you go back to the edit.
Well, no, I can see that it could be done in one sitting, because this is what happens with an author, and this is why I named my program Joy on Paper, because you get that moment when you start writing that sometimes it just comes to you. You see it. You know what's in your heart and in your mind, and it flows, and it's actually very magical, isn't it?
It is. Wow. You know, this really shows how much older I've got, because if we had had this conversation when I first started, I told my first novel at 27, and don't worry, I'm not going for any kind of shameless plug here. And I used to shy away from those sort of esoteric descriptions of the writing life. You know, I'd think, well, it's really just about craft, whatever that means, right? And I'm just sitting down, and I'm doing the work, and I make sure that I show up every day, and blah, blah, blah. And I remember always looking at my audience when I would say that, and their eyes would sort of glaze over. I would think, well, how can their eyes be glazing over? I'm telling them the truth. But I think I was telling them the truth with a lowercase t. You know, I think that uppercase T truth is that there's this process that happens. Much of it seems to happen on a subconscious level. We used to call the subconscious the muse, right? It's pretty much the same concept. The words have just gotten less beautiful. And yeah, this writing process was a magic thing. I don't know if I'd go so far as to call it joyful. There's very little of my writing process that feels joyful to me. It's more like sort of tweezing out parts of my brain and smearing them on the page. But this was certainly nowhere near as painful as previous ones. And I am pleased with how the story turned out, and I can't say that about all my work.
Well, I think that you have, you know, great talent. And when I was looking at your work, I wanted to mention to my audience that one of the books that they should read is Losing Graceland.
Oh, that's very kind.
Because, I don't know, you describe it, you have an interesting webpage, and I looked at it, I thought, because Janice is very colorful, and she's got a big, and she's standing there, and she's smiling, and you see a sort of a joy in her face, a joy about New York, and then I got to your webpage, like, okay, Mike is he's an interesting character.
I guess, I think I need to update it. It is a little bit sour, it seems, you know. And I think I've become so fixated and obsessed with my work that the other stuff, I'm like, yeah, you know, if people want to read about me, fine, but I really want them just to focus on my words. But it doesn't quite work that way, right? So I hope I didn't make it too hard to find out stuff about me.
No, not at all. You know, I thought... as I was reading Losing Graceland, I was thinking, first I was thinking that, boy, you're an interesting guy. You come out with some interesting ideas. But I think when the main character, whose name is Ben Fish, I don't know. I think it's a great name. It's one that once people read the book, and they'll always sort of They'll remember it. That's I always like when an author does write a book where you remember the name. It's a long time after you might finish the book, and people will say, well, did you read that book where Ben Fish is the guy who he answers an advertisement and he gets $10,000 to drive somebody around. people will remember it. They'll say, oh, yeah, I remember that. And so that's why I wanted... It's a fascinating story. Now, I mean, here you saw a painting with a railroad track and something clicked and you come out with a story. How did you come out with the idea for Losing Graceland?
Oh, that's great. Okay, that one, I do have an answer, and it might sound canned, but I assure you it is not. Although maybe just by saying it isn't canned makes it canned. So whatever, I'll just plow forward. Years ago, I mean, I think I wrote that book in 2009, came out around 2010, 11-ish. I was on a road trip with my wife, and we drove past this bar in the middle of nowhere, and there was this kind of ramshackle sign that said, you know, Elvis Karaoke Night. First prize, something like $100. And I thought, my gosh, if Elvis were alive, this would be the kind of place that he would show up to and give that Elvis Karaoke Night. And I bet you he'd come in second place. There is this sense of the true Elvis having been subsumed by the cult of Elvis after his death, you know, which is not, you know, I'm not saying I came up with that on my own, that has been written about by far better authors than I am, but it was something that from a fictional standpoint, it once again, it stuck with me. And it was the image of this kind of sad, broken old man with still a little bit of that lion's pride walking into this dive bar and in the middle of nowhere and going up on stage. And now nobody in the audience would know, oh my gosh, this is the actual Elvis. And we only gave him second place. So within that and a dark humor, that's where the germ of that idea came.
Well, I think you are, I must say, of, you know, I talk to a lot of authors, and I must say that I almost like want to look into that mind of yours, because you are a little bit different, you know, it's, you're not just the ordinary, writer. There's a lot going on in that head of yours, and I was like, between the Graceland, Losing Graceland, which is a funny book. I mean, the characters are fantastic. It's an adventure. It's like a road. It is a road adventure. I love road adventure books anyway.
I do too.
And I think that it's a great book, and that's why I wanted to mention it. One to my listeners that they can get that book, and if that's why anthologies are really so, you know, they were sort of, we thought they were passé, but I think they're coming back. One, because a lot of young people do have shorter attention span, so they're ready to read a short story. And in this book, From Sea to Stormy Sea, because Larry's featuring many, many writers who aren't famous, you know, everyday names, but you should be an everyday name. I think once people read, I'm telling you, once people read Losing Graceland, that you will become a name that they will remember. And so Larry has done a wonderful thing in selecting this group of absolutely wonderful authors. And I want to thank you, Micah, so much. You gave me a lot of pleasure in this book, Losing Graceland, and also with your story, Get Him, in this anthology, the brilliant creation of Larry Block, of course. And, you know, I will tell people they can go to your website. they'll go to your website and they'll say, okay, this guy is either very strange or very interesting or both. And I you know, I don't know if you drew that the website.
No.
No, you didn't do it yourself.
No, that was the web designer. That was an illustration of my writing desk.
And you have this little blurb under stories, malevolent and benign.
That's
on your calling card, I guess.
Yeah, that is my attempt to be clever.
Well, I think you are very clever, and you certainly show it in this wonderful 900-mile journey to Memphis that Ben Fish takes. And so I hope that people will get Losing Graceland. I want to thank you. I will invite you, and you will be back on sometime January, February.
Of course.
And we'll talk more about this, and we can talk more about all the things that are going on in that head of yours, okay?
Thank you, Patsy. I'm glad your listeners can't see me blushing. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
All right, Patsy.
Bye-bye. Bye. Okay. Wow. It's fun. It's a lot of work for Ed. He has to do all. Ed, I appreciate it. It's so funny. I love to do these relay interviews because it is absolutely a wonderful way for me to be able to talk to so many wonderful authors, but it's also a wonderful way for you to discover new authors that you might not have read. And so always in an anthology, they'll put the name of, you know, Sarah Paretsky or somebody really famous on top. And then you have to, you know, you say, okay, who are these other people? You might not know them. But really, once you read these stories, and as I really got a kick out of this story by Mike and Nathan. And just check it out. Wonderful gift for anybody. There will be at least 3 or 4 stories you'll absolutely adore, and another 5 or 6 authors that you will discover, and you'll say, why have I not read them before? And I really felt bad because I did not know some of these authors very well, but I've had so much fun just getting to know them and getting to know their work. So it's just part of the fun and the joy of being a writer and being a wonderful reader, because you know, writers need you, and the more you read, the better. And please make sure that the best gift, people don't need a lot of junky stuff. People really need books in their head, because with all of the things that are going on in the world, and you really want to turn off that television and streaming video, I'm telling you, I'm really getting crazy because they have so much junk on there. You want to find some books that will really occupy your mind, fill your mind with new ideas, things that you can talk about. Join a book club. Join the library book clubs where they have every month they have a meeting. And there they often have theme parties about a particular author. So it's a wonderful opportunity to just meet people who love to read. And of course, you should also start writing. Because remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into streaming video, a major motion picture, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So get out there, sit down, start writing. And also, to be a good writer, you have to be a good reader. And I just want to thank Big Ed in the control room today. He got all these calls for me, and I really appreciate it. Everybody say, oh, and he saluted me, and I'm saluting him back. Everybody have an absolutely wonderful weekend. Bye-bye now.